When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality. Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Dr. D's taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With a mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers. As a Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers. Using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
What is up, Inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane. And today for you guys, as I'm sure you guys have noticed from the past, I like to take some time here and there to highlight some of the artists in the community. So for today, I have one of the awesome cryptid artists that I've noticed around different conventions in the community come on. And we have a great conversation digging into some folklore and all that kind of fun stuff. But before we get into the show, I'm going to be doing a little bit of restructuring as far as the show goes, so it's not so heavy in the beginning with all the news and updates and running through all the front of house stuff. So I'm going to kind of split it up, do it a little bit differently. This should run a little bit faster for you guys, so it'll be a little bit easier to listen to before the show. So that's the main piece of news and updates. And besides that, of course, it's quickly approaching Small Town Monster Fest. So if you guys haven't already got yourself some tickets for that, make sure you guys scoop some tickets. I'm going to be there vending, of course, with Oren and Riley from Midwest Mythos is going to be there too. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have the full crew there. Even Jenny, the old co-host from Bizarre Encounters, is going to be hanging out with us and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to seeing some of you guys out there. And if any of you guys are planning on coming out there, let me know. And if I know you by face name, of course, I will point it at you out and we will be able to have a conversation. Maybe be able to hang out after. But of course, make sure you guys scoop some tickets for that. It's going to be June 29th in downtown Canton, Ohio at the Doubletree by Hilton. Kids 12 and under are free, but everybody else, you guys have to make sure you guys get your tickets, like I said, before they run out of tickets, because I know this is going to be a huge, great event this year. Going into the restructured front of house stuff, if anybody has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to OMM Encounter Reports at Outlook.com. There is also a submission form on the Linktree for that that says report an encounter. Depending on what you want to do with it, of course, I'd like to kind of either one, read them in the beginning of the show, of course, or possibly even do an episode where I have some of you guys record yourself and send it in to me so I can kind of make a structured episode out of it. But if you don't want to do any of that, and you just want somebody to talk to you about your experiences, I'm always here for that too, of course. Just shoot me a message and let me know exactly what you want to do with them. And if you enjoy this show, don't forget to go and check out my other podcast, Bizarre Encounters, that I do with my awesome co-host, Oren. Over there, we deep dive into stuff a little bit less as far as the interviews go, but kind of diving into the same topics, of course. And you guys can also check out our other show that we do, Bizarre Inquiries, which is a YouTube and Patreon show. We usually try to drop at least one episode of that a month on the main feed, but the rest of it, of course, will be Patreon exclusive. And if anybody has any questions they would like to submit for that, you guys can always shoot me a message on social media through email. Any way you guys want to get a hold of me, if you use your question, even if it's a Patreon episode, we'll make sure that you are able to listen and check out that episode. And if you guys want to support the show, there's a couple different ways you guys can do it. You guys can leave a 5-star rating / review on iTunes / Spotify / whatever podcatcher you guys happen to use. And of course, if you guys leave a 5-star review, I will read it on the show and give you guys a big shout out. And you guys can also support the show by becoming a Patreon member. Over there, I recently updated the tiers. I also added a $1 ad-free / early access tier. So there's a lot of new restructuring that went on over there. Bigger discounts for smaller tiers and stuff like that. I added a couple more tiers. So if you guys are interested in that, there is a 7-day free trial for a couple of the tiers, and there's going to be a lot of new stuff going on over there as far as another Patreon exclusive show that I am currently in the process of working on. I'll give you guys, of course, a little bit more updates as we get a little bit farther into that. And then the third way you guys can support the show is through the OMM merch store. There will be an exclusive discount that you guys can get by coming to Small Town Monster Fest 2. So I'm putting that out there now, of course. I think Cryptid 10 might still be active. I'm not 100% sure. If it is, it should say it at the top of the page, but I will be dropping a new design on there if I haven't already, and I will be dropping that on social media if you guys want to check that out before I even drop the design in the store, of course. And to stay up to date on the show, don't forget to go and check out Inquiries of Our Reality and Open Minds Media on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, artist Jill Colbert. How is it going today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm having a good time and I'm happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to finally get you on the show after talking for a little bit at Squonkapalooza, like we were talking about before we started rolling on the show. But everybody knows Squonkapalooza gets pretty busy, so you don't really get too much time to socialize unless you're going to like the little after party and stuff that they do afterwards. So it's nice to actually finally have a sit down and be able to have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I guess a good spot to start for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, why don't you let everybody know a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So my artist name is Manfish Inc. And I am an artist and illustrator that is now on the East Coast. I'm originally from the West Coast. I have a degree in illustration, but ever since I started doing shows at conventions and pop culture events, I just started doing stuff, just selling my artwork for people, and people seem to like my artwork by itself and not when I did it for other people. My background is illustrating for heavy metal bands for the past decade, and but a few years ago I started painting little creatures in the forest, and it kind of evolved into cryptids, which have taken over my life in the best way possible.
They tend to do that.
I love it, and I've always been drawn to folklore, fantasy, mythology, so it just took a natural takeover of my entire life, and I could not be more grateful and thankful.
So for anybody that may not be familiar with like your art style in particular, how would you describe it, and what kind of inspired you to do that particular style? Because of course, like you were kind of saying, people enjoy the original artwork rather than the stuff that you're doing for somebody else, because it really is like somebody expressing themselves through their own individual style where they can really adapt to it. So as far as like the listeners go and stuff, like how would you kind of describe your style?
That was a tough question, but good one. I would describe my artwork in three different categories: dark fantasy, the whimsical, and spooky cute. I do a lot of dark imagery with really bright colors. and that's a lot of my more serious work, but I'm most well-known right now for painting adorable friend-shaped cryptids in forests. And I do a lot of, and it's not just like in a typical forest, it's in like a pink forest with a rainbow, or it's in a mushroom grove with all these tall fir trees. And I paint a lot of creatures where you just like want to go up and hug them and just be their friend versus having them chase you through the woods in sheer terror. And I like to paint a lot on like little tiny canvases that are like 4 by 4 inches. Or I think the largest one I have is maybe 4 by 12 inches, because I want everybody to have a little piece of something that makes them happy or in, you know, just whimsical and nostalgic of their childhood, or just a nice reminder of folklore and not something that makes them scared.
I was going to say, I have a good mix in my room as far as some of the stuff that looks a little bit scary, and then I got some of the cutesy stuff. But one of my personal favorites, honestly, is one of your little 4x4 ones that you mentioned. I guess the best way I can kind of describe it, it has kind of like a brownish background with like a kind of greenish nebula behind it with a black silhouette of forest. And I think I remember having a conversation with you about it, because I asked if it was Sasquatch, and you mentioned that it was something else because you didn't want to use particular names for certain creatures and stuff like that. But one of the coolest parts about the picture is that you kind of wrap it around the outside. So it's not just on the face, it's wrapped up and around the outside. And it's just, it has like a pop to it. It just really sticks out. Like, it's honestly one of my favorite pieces I have up here.
Thank you. Yeah. And I started doing that too, because again, working for heavy metal musicians for 10 years was really great. However, I cannot be dark and brutal all the time. So sometimes it's nice to have like a little release. But I still brought a lot of those characteristics into my even my friendlier artwork. I think the one that you have might actually be Sasquatch, but I'm developing a lot of original creatures as well. Oh yeah, that I think that's a Sasquatch. Yeah, the one I have ones with little antlers, and everybody thinks he's the W cryptid, but he's a forest guardian.
That's what it was. I remember having a conversation with you about something that I was like, hey, is this a Wendigo? And you were like, no, it's this or whatever. Cause you said you didn't want to use that particular wordage or something like that. But yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. But thank you. I'm happy he has a good home with you.
I'll say perfect spot in the studio. Unfortunately, it's like right above where the camera's at, because if you can see the one picture right there, it sits right above it. But next time I go to one of the conventions, I'll definitely have to scoop some more, because my issue last time was that I was kind of limited on funds and stuff because I'm from Michigan. I drove all the way out to Pennsylvania, and there was so much there that I enjoyed that I had a hard time trying to decide which one I wanted. And I was telling myself that next time I saw you, I know you remember seeing these like Mothman ones where you kind of had like red and stuff in the background. That was my next one I was going to try to see if I could find from you.
Yeah, well, and now the series is kind of, again, taking over my life, that I'm now doing all these. I think I now have like 14 different cryptids that I paint. And I have other ones in like stickers and stuff, but it's, you know, like I'm doing the Enfield Horror, the Frogman, Loveland Frogman. I'm doing a lot of aliens now, so it's like, so yeah, next time you see me, I'm gonna have a lot more.
I'm gonna have to get one of those alien ones too, because as far as the show goes, I do like the cryptid stuff, the UFO stuff / aliens, and the paranormal stuff. So I kind of like collecting art pieces where I have a little piece of all three. So if you end up branching over to doing some kind of ghostly apparition stuff at some point, I'll have to grab an alien and then one of those ones, then I'll have at least a cryptid one that I can start exploring into the other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you said that you have 14 characters that you like to paint. For anybody that might be interested in picking up some of your artwork, maybe it's some of their favorite cryptids, which ones do you paint in particular? And I always like to ask, which ones are your personal favorites to paint?
I can't pick favorites because it's like picking my favorite child. But I do like to hyper focus on some. Like, there will be times where I paint like 20 Fresno Nightcrawlers, and then I'll stop, and then I'll paint 10 Loveland Frogman. Frogman pieces. But some of the ones that I have been doing is Jersey Devil, Chupacabra, Mothman, always Mothman. I do Bigfoot. Forgetting everything I've ever done right now. Another favorite of mine to paint is the Flatwoods Monster. And I always put her on like these triangle canvases, and they're like apple green, and I love them.
I remember seeing a couple of those at Squonkapalooza. I remember those ones.
Yeah, now I started painting her, and like I'm happy I can talk to another cryptid nerd about this, that I recently started painting her with a red hood instead of a green one. So like now the old ones are almost like special edition because they're green, and all the new ones going forward have the red hood. But yeah, Fresno Nightcrawler. I started doing a new obscure one is Old Green Eyes. Enfield Horror. And then just kind of different reiterations. I also have some of my own original creatures. I have this little, we talked about the Forest Guardian. But one that everybody is kind of in love with, his name is Moff. He is a little moss-like creature. He's dubbed the goodest boy of the forest. And he just wants, and I did like an entire series of him hanging out with different cryptids. And like Braxy is picking him up and like carrying him through the forest, like, baby. And Mothman just loves how fuzzy he is. And like he'll go on walks with the Fresno Nightcrawlers. So he pops up in my work all the time.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. And you talk about as your work's kind of progressing and stuff. Are you kind of moving into other mediums other than just painting canvas? And I know you do some prints and stuff. I know you do some buttons and everything. Do you have like new means of medium that you're looking forward into, kind of diving into possibly?
So as an illustrator, I mostly lived in Photoshop. I drew and I painted. So actually now the cryptids have taken me more into a traditional media, and also with the rise of, unfortunately with AI art, I don't even like to call it art, AI generated imagery, I have been seeing I've become a little cynical about digital media lately, and even though it's like my most used medium even now, that the canvases and a lot of my traditional stuff is kind of what it's developed after mostly being digital for the past decade.
People like that original, like hold it in your hand, type stuff now. Like, we kind of went through a digital age, and it seems like everybody's kind of going back into like the tangible stuff, where it's like, if there was a print or a painting, like, I feel like more often than not, at least everybody in the community, me, myself included, are going to end up going for the canvas instead.
Yeah. Because also I try to price my work at a really affordable price. That if somebody can like give me, like, if they have a $20 bill, you can get an original piece from me. And I think that's also very important.
I know you did like a little tiny picture of like a little forest my daughter actually has in her room. It's like maybe like an inch by like half inch. It's like a little tiny picture. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. So I don't have those anymore, but, I used to sell like little original drawings for like $2 because, you know, I just did it in my free time and I want people to enjoy something physical. And, I just think, unfortunately, with a lot of shows, it's hard to bring a lot of originals out. And so I can fit my canvases in my suitcase because they're so small and I can wheel it on out. But I think medium wise, yeah, I think it might just be exploring into like doing the paintings on watercolor paper. So I have more options of like doing more detailed illustrations versus, if people look up my work, they'll see a lot of my cryptids are fairly simple in shape. they're you know, silhouette and recognizable, but it's not like this heavily detailed creature. So I think that's what I would like to explore more. But it's hard to do that on canvas.
I mean, even so if maybe you did the watercolors, you could still do some really, really cool silhouettes. And, you know, where you kind of have the nebulas and stuff in the back of your paintings, you could kind of do it like the mixed watercolor look. That would look really, really cool, actually.
Yeah. And especially with watercolor paper, it has less of a texture, so I can get in a lot more detail, at least with my technique, than doing it on a 4x4 surface on canvas that has a very unforgiving texture sometimes if you're doing details.
I could actually honestly see a lot of your designs. It'd be really, really cool if they were like on like the handmade bleached tie-dyed like t-shirts for like the background, and then you do like the hand print stuff on them with all of your like black silhouettes and everything. Like, I feel like those would make some really, really cool t-shirts.
Oh yeah, I would love to do apparel. It's just so hard to lug that around.
Oh yeah. You got to do something where you're like, I have an online store. You can use this discount code for free shipping at events. They don't have to worry about bringing your t-shirts with you or something.
Oh yeah. That's actually genius. But I, last time I did t-shirts was a long time ago, and they ended up sitting in my closet for so long. And then after doing like t-shirt designs, and I've toured with bands as a merch manager, and I'm like, God, I hate these stupid shirt boxes.
Hey, I mean, something else also kind of doing that same style, but a lot easier to carry around. You could do like mini tapestries with like handkerchiefs and stuff, and you could do like the acid bleach and everything on them. And then you could do like silk prints, and then you can literally just crumple it up, throw it in a suitcase. You can fit a couple hundred of them in a suitcase.
Yeah, perfect.
And it kind of fits your theme of like the little affordable pieces that everybody would be able to have if you did on like a bandana style or something.
Yeah, I would love to do stuff like that. I also want to do patches as well. I'm also looking to do hopefully enamel pins within the next year. But yeah, I definitely like the bandana idea too. So hopefully we can work something out. I also just need a little bit more funding to do that.
Hey, if you ever end up making the bandana little tapestry ones, I'll be the first one to buy one if you get that up and rolling.
Absolutely. I'll hold you to that.
So I'll make sure. I'll come and ask you about it. As soon as I see you post one, I'll be like, so where's mine at? So also kind of diving into all of your different artwork that you do. You said that you'd like to dive into a lot of like mystical things, folklore. Everybody kind of has their favorite piece of folklore. As far as like all the stuff that you've kind of dived into in order to kind of incorporate into your art, what's like some of your favorite folklore you've come across?
My favorite folklore creature. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings nerd. And my favorite character is Treebeard. I adore Ents so much.
I actually have something pretty close to that tattooed on my leg. I have a tree with like the old man face in it.
Oh, that's sick. Yeah. I also grew up on the West Coast. Well, it wasn't on the coast, but Lake Tahoe on the Nevada-California border. So I grew up in a lot of alpine forest. So I love Ents. I love the concept of Ents. My forest guardian is kind of like my homage to Ents. Ents are also like, I have, they're just so detailed because they're so detailed and I want them to be detailed. Like a lot of my prints and stuff, I have, I think like five or six different prints of Ents. A lot of people also think they're Wendigos because they carry on like, no, he protects the trees.
He doesn't destroy, he protects.
Carries one hobbit, two Isengard. I also just wanted to be a fairy for half my life. So I loved like Irish and Celtic fairy tales and stuff like that. I usually had my nose in like a book when I was younger, so I read like a lot of fantasy novels, and yeah, I just wanted to go into the fae realm. But as I got older, and older, like meaning now in the past 5 years, and again with cryptids taking over my life, like I've been fascinated with like Champy. I now want to go to Lake Champlain and go to like listen to all the like all the recordings that they have of Champy and stuff. I think that's so cool. I also just really love stories of different realms. And now that I live in Appalachia, kind of, because I'm in Maryland, I'm in Baltimore, but you know, just being in that area, I think it's just so rich of all these stories and folklore and just history that I haven't had access to in like physically going to it and talking to people that I had on the West Coast.
So I guess that might be a pretty good spot to kind of lead in one of two ways, of course, because I always like to ask people about their local folklore if there's somebody that likes digging into stories and stuff. But usually before that, I always like to dive into if anybody has had any of their own weird personal experiences. So considering you like to dive into these stories and you're into cryptids, I always got to ask, do you have any of your own bizarre experiences, be it paranormal, cryptid, alien, anything like that?
Yeah, so I went to college in Savannah, Georgia, which is the second most haunted city in America. And I love dark history. However, I am not because of certain experiences, I now ask wherever I move if somebody died in the house or in the apartment. Because like, and that's also the thing living on the East Coast, because there's so like every war happened in every state on this side of the country. So like, it's so interesting to like go outside and like my park was a Revolutionary War battleground, or in Savannah, I would step outside and I'm like, I walk on literal tombstones getting to my classroom.
Sometimes it makes you wonder though, as far as the rest of the country goes, because the natives were here, how many other battlegrounds where there could have been thousands that died that we're just not aware of? We just have weird activity in certain areas, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And like, so I had a playful spirit. So I'll talk about my East Coast one, and I'll talk about my West Coast one. My East Coast one, I had this spirit kind of taunting me for like 3 weeks. And every time I would go to bed, and this was in my dorm room, every time I would go to bed, I would stick my hand out and I would just feel this cold hand just like wrap its fingers around mine. And I would do my best to ignore it. And it always happened like in between like 3 and 4 a.m.
Witching hour, of course.
And I would just be laying in bed and I would just feel the sheets sink down. And like this thing was like, I couldn't see it, but I could feel it. It was sitting on my chest. It was poking me and giving me like muscle spasms. And I didn't sleep for weeks. My roommate thought I was losing my mind. Like objects would just like fly across the room. And it wasn't like anything big. It was just like a pencil or something would on a flat surface, something would just like roll off the table. But I didn't sleep for 3 weeks until finally it got bored of me and moved on.
Wow. That means that just to prove a point of how much this thing was bothering you, 3 weeks without sleep, like that's insane from not being able to sleep from this thing. Like, wow.
So, I dreaded going to bed and I was so exhausted and, And so my West Coast one, we talked about, with a lot of Native American, folklore is, I lived where the local, I don't know if you're familiar with like Nevada, geography, but, we have Pyramid Lake where, we had the children, the light children of the lake that would like lure people into the lake.
Almost like a siren type of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain. I feel like I'm kind of butchering it because I heard about it. I was like, nope, I don't. I'm good.
See, I haven't heard about that one. I've lived in Michigan basically my whole life. So I always love digging into some of this local stuff like this. And yeah, I've actually never heard of this one before.
Also, I live really close to Virginia City, which is a very haunted town from the Gold Rush. Also we had the Washoe tribe where I grew up, and the thing is about some of those spirits was they weren't necessarily like they didn't have ill intentions. So I would get what I call, I don't know if this is the correct term, but like shadow walkers. They just would like pass by my room and I would just have these insane cold spots and just like, again, things would just shift in the room, but it wasn't like, hey, wake up. I'm basically going to haunt you. It was more of like, I'm moving through this space. And at first it kind of terrified me but after it happened, a few times over the course of 20 years, it was just kind of one of those things where I'm like, okay, it's just going to leave me alone. Yeah, it's a little unsettling that it's here, but it's not going to do anything. But I think locally where I grew up, it wasn't necessarily paranormal, but I lived right by where the Donner Party got stuck and ate each other.
See, that's one of those things that if these things were kind of just like passing through, I mean, depending on which way you kind of dive into hauntings, people talk about like the residual or like intelligent hauntings, but the residual stuff is the stuff that something so traumatic happened that, it kind of just leaves that imprint in time. And of course, with that event, there's definitely some type of imprint there, but it also kind of makes you wonder, even within the area, how many other people passing through could have had similar experiences. And maybe it just wasn't publicized or like a written down story, but there's still all these traumatic events that happen in this area that people are just seeing residual hauntings from.
Yeah. Well, the Donner Party was about 20 miles away. But I remember going to like field trips to their graves.
morbid so field trips, but awesome. I wish that I would have done stuff like that back when I was a kid.
Imagine being in third grade. They're like, yes, these people ate each other. Like, all right. Now I'm like, I know I'm a weird adult now.
I wish I had stuff like that. We went to like the science center every single year and we had like the same field trips every year. And they're just kind of like the generic places. Like, I wish I would have went to some like haunted or just like weird, bizarre, horrible history type areas. But I don't feel like there's a lot of them that are museums in Michigan.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Yeah, and where I live, we just had a lot of the gold rush. That was kind of the point where, like, a lot of, I'm gonna say, Western culture history was, like, because over on the East Coast, it starts with the Mayflower, essentially, and then, but over there, it doesn't start until the Gold Rush. But like, even now, we're still not really exposed to a lot of like indigenous folklore as much as we should be, and like a lot of the history there, because like it's fascinating that like apparently I found out we have like thunderbirds out there, and then our local cryptid, but I don't know if it's. Our local crypt is Tahoe Tessie. No one, it's just a ploy to make money. But now I'm like, you know what? I kind of want Tahoe Tessie to be real, because.
I mean, when it comes to the water stuff, I mean, I definitely dive into all the land cryptids. Don't get me wrong. But if I had to bet on something to be something that exists, it's definitely gonna be the water stuff. Cause it's like, we don't know or understand most of the waterways that we have in the first place, and how fast can something that big possibly move through some of these waterways, or maybe somebody will have a sighting in this lake and then it goes out to the sea during the day or during the night or something. Yeah. And comes back and forth. Like, there's just so much probability behind these lake monsters to me.
one of the things that's so fascinating about Lake Tahoe is that it's right on the corner where Nevada meets California, and it's 20 miles across. So it's not a tiny lake. It's not Lake Michigan by any means, but it's like the eighth largest lake in the country, but it's like the third deepest lake in the entire world.
That's what I was going to say. People don't take into consideration the depth when it comes to these things, because that's where it's really important.
And I loved learning about the weird part about Lake Tahoe is that it can get to below freezing. It can get below 32 degrees Fahrenheit without freezing, because it's that deep. And again, I love dark history, so I loved learning about this growing up, was we had the Rat Pack and Italian mobs in certain parts of the lake, and they would toss their bodies out into the lake. And because the lake was so deep and so cold, that about 250 feet down, the bodies would get stuck. They can't sink and they can't float because the pressure and the cold just kind of meet in a certain spot. So, and I think one of the indigenous tribes also had water funerals. So there's all these like bodies in the lake. And occasionally an earthquake would come and just whoop, and then a body would float up to the surface. So the news would report that they find a body that's like perfectly preserved, and they find like a receipt in his pocket from like 90 years ago.
Well, you kind of get the same stories from Lake Superior, because I used to dive into shipwrecks when I was a kid, and the whole thing with Lake Superior is that it has the same thing going on, so none of the bodies ever end up coming back up, and nobody could find the ships because it's so deep.
And Jacques Cousteau went down into Lake Tahoe, and he didn't share any of his videos because he's like, you guys aren't ready to see what's down there.
It just looks like a zombie movie, you know, where it's like down in the water where there's like just like a crowd of zombies. It just looks like that, but you know, not alive, hopefully.
God, that would be terrifying.
Well, if there's ever a zombie apocalypse, we all know to stay away from Lake Tahoe. They're perfectly preserved and they're going to start walking out. But also, too, that might be the first test site if they try to create something that reanimates bodies. So, again, just avoid Lake Tahoe.
Do you want perfectly preserved bodies? Boy, do we have a place for you.
Next thing you know, an umbrella corporation opens up right next to Lake Tahoe, and we're like, we know what you're doing.
No.
We're making beauty products. No big deal.
Yeah.
We use these for testing because they're so well preserved, just to make sure that they're not going to give you a rash. We're not doing anything sinister, I promise.
Just call us the local lake cleanup.
We're helping.
We're helping. Oh, goodness.
But, yeah, digging into, like, some of the lake stuff, though, I mean, as far as just like the lakes that don't freeze like that anyways, I mean, if there is something huge down there, I mean, even if it does start to freeze a couple inches on the top, a couple feet, it's like at the bottom of it, it's still maintaining somewhat of a temperature, a constant temperature, be it if it's cold or warm. And if you have certain things that adapt to that and they adapt to the pressure, like I'm almost kind of curious if, you know, in Lake Tahoe, there may be some unidentified creatures. I mean, be it even if they're like little small ones that just people haven't identified yet. I feel like there's at that depth, there's probably some interesting things that are kind of adapting to exist down there.
Oh, absolutely. And there's even theories that, like, again, this is, I kind of like the theory that there's only one lake monster and they're just connected by underwater ways.
See, I've theorized about that with like caverns and stuff like that, possibly going through some of these places, because people will like, you know, search an entire lake. They won't find anything, but it's like, yeah, but there could be caves that lead into a whole other underground lake that we're not even aware of, you know, but there's only a certain little hole opening to get to it.
Yeah. Crazy.
They could have a whole breeding nest down there and they just know better than to come out, except for if they're getting food.
Like these guys.
Plesiosaurs are existing everywhere. They just have become very intelligent. They're like at the same intelligence level as dolphins now, and they just know to stay away from us and stay in their little caverns.
Yep. Smart.
If you hear the siren songs, like the kids you were talking about, it's actually the plesiosaurs. That's how they've learned to lure in their victims. Cause you know, if there's nobody that sees them when they're done eating, then they're fine. You know, you got to lure people in, and then nobody will, there's no victims because you're taking them.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides just a really blurry photo glimpse from a distance. But, I mean, even like Lake Superior, I mean, we kind of got our own lake monsters as far as we got, like the underwater panther, and, there's also Pressy, like basically like, the plesiosaur for the Great Lakes. So, I mean, I feel like these things exist within every single Great Lake. And I am kind of curious if, one, maybe they are the same thing all connecting through, or maybe if there are certain breeding populations where, you know, you take into consideration like a bear, it uses so much area, and then the next male bear will have another whole set of area. If you have some type of plesiosaur type being, I mean, a lake could literally be like their area. So maybe there only is one per lake, and that's how they have a breeding population, is they'll just cross over to lakes and then they'll reproduce, or maybe these things
like
live
salmon.
Forever. Exactly. But I mean, when it comes to these like old beings too, because I mean, if it is theoretically a plesiosaur, I mean, we don't know what the life expectancy could be of these things. I mean, there's like whales that'll live to be a couple hundred years old. There's sharks that'll live to be a couple hundred years old. I mean, could be the same thing with these things. These things could only maybe breed once every 300 years for all we know. And, you know, then you get little baby Nessies, and then the next generation comes in when that one dies out. And then it looks like it's just the same beings through all of time, but it's actually the baby, continuous cycle of plesiosaurs and lakes.
And how crazy is that? It's so crazy.
See, I want to know if it is a plesiosaur, or if there are other things it could possibly be. Because I know like Lake Loch Ness, they dive into the whole theory about it possibly being some type of giant salamander, because that's one of those places that doesn't have a giant salamander, but it should, according to science. So, I mean, I kind of dive into that theory quite often. And that would explain why they can never find it on sonar and stuff, why they can't ever find where these things are they're hiding at, because I mean, they kind of got their weird type of body where they can kind of meander themselves into weird little nooks and crannies and stuff. And you know, the tail, the head that people are saying could be like some kind of a tail. But I mean, that theory kind of fits for Lake Loch Ness. But as far as like the other lakes go, I'm kind of curious what some of like the heavy duty researchers that are particular into this one particular lake monster might have as far as like a theory other than the blanket term of plesiosaur.
yeah, for sure.
So kind of diving some more into maybe some of your stories, maybe some of your local stories. I know that you threw that one at me that I hadn't really heard before. But I always like to kind of collect stories within the show and kind of bring stuff back to the light if it starts to get forgotten. So, you know, it may not be super popular to you, or maybe it was popular to you and isn't much to you now, but if you have any more local stories from places you've lived, I definitely like to dive into those.
Actually, this one happened in Baltimore before I lived here. I was on tour with a band. They're called Winter Sun, if anybody's heard of them. But we had an off day here in Baltimore, and on my birthday, and we went to the Edgar Allan Poe Museum.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And yeah, and we went to the his gravesite. And like it just felt really weird, and I was with a couple of my crewmates, and we were there for a few minutes, and then one of them's like, we have to get out of here now because I just saw a gargoyle's face like melt. And I'm like, oh god,
somebody like, got into the LSD.
And we're just like, oh man. But I unfortunately haven't experienced, well, actually, fortunately, I've had enough ghost experiences to last me for my lifetime, because a lot of them were just, I like my sleep. I like my sleep. But I haven't had any in particular over on the East Coast. A lot of it was, you know, when I was in college and, back home, you know, just dealing with like cold spots and everything like that. And I've, again, the shadow walkers have kind of followed me not followed me. I have run into them quite a few times, all throughout Nevada and California. Because again, there were a lot of tragedies that dealt with, the indigenous people over there, and, you know, creating the state of California, and a lot of the battles in between with, you know, the Mexican territories and all the Southwest and all that. And I think, kind of like on a more positive one, I my grandmother came to me.
Oh, those are always the best stories when you get the positive paranormal stories too.
Yeah. I grew up Catholic, unfortunately. And,
you and me both grew up Catholic.
Yeah. No more. So I was, it was during like my confirmation retreat, and my grandmother just kind of sat next to me, and, she had passed 8 years prior, 5 years. Yeah. About five to 8 years prior, something like that. And, she just sat with me, started rubbing my back, and just, and my brain was clear as day, and just basically told me that she was proud of where I was headed and that she loved me, and then she just said, okay, I'm gonna go now, and then she left.
Well, beautiful. That's, yeah, I was gonna say, an absolutely beautiful story. I mean, I've had my grandpa following me since I was a kid, and he does this thing where when my he used to work in another state, so during the week he'd be gone, and then he'd come back to the house on the weekends with my grandma, and she got into a bunch of car accidents, so she had trouble getting out of bed and stuff, so he'd turn on the hallway light so that she would know that he was home. So that kind of became the thing after he passed away, is that he just turns on lights, and that's how you always know when he's like around. He always does it at certain times. Like if you need to wake up and get something done, or if something's going on, he'll like flick on the light and stuff. But
get up.
Yeah, pretty much. Like I love these stories though, where it's like, you know, it's somebody that you care about and you actually know, because with a lot of the paranormal stuff, I feel like most people kind of take it as like the dark and scary, not realizing that a lot of the stuff that you're experiencing that could be dark and scary, may not be exactly how you perceive it. Of course, if you have something that's like, you know, throwing you around the room or throwing stuff at you, like that's one thing. But if something's like kind of touching your back possibly, or, you know, like touching your hair, things like that, you know, it might be somebody that you actually know and cared about, and they're trying to make contact with you without actually like scaring you. You know, if you had like a mom that used to like, you know, play with your hair and stuff like that where you're falling asleep, and then your mom passes away, and then a couple of years later you kind of notice something paranormal and something touching your hair while you're sleeping. Of course, that's a scary experience, but once you kind of get that feeling and realize that it may not be exactly like the dark, scary thing that you perceive it is, you know, when you know, it's one of those things. You can kind of like sense when those people that you care about are around. Like if you're getting a gut feeling that it's not right, like that's one thing. But like if you get this weird comforting feeling, even though you're scared, like maybe it isn't exactly what you perceive it as. Maybe, you know, kind of step back and kind of get a little bit more of an understanding of it before just directly fearing it and running away from it. Cause it may just be, you know, somebody that you love or care about just trying to say, hey, I'm still here. I'm listening to you.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
Actually, my grandmother has, talking about that, my grandmother has actually appeared to two other members of my family after she passed. Three, actually. She appeared to my cousin when she was having like a crisis of conscience, and my grandmother was there to just be like, was Edna mode, pull yourself together. but you know, just kind of like, I know you're having doubts with what you're doing and where you're going, but I love you and I'm here for you. And around her funeral, she appeared to my uncle, who also is not religious, and he said that she went down to him, and he was like, she's like, oh, Peter, you don't have to worry about me. It's okay. I got my wings. And then she just like leaves the room. And she came to pick up my grandfather when he passed. So my aunt, felt her as my grandfather was taking his last breath, because he was, he was in a vegetative state, and my grandmother, he was getting weaker and weaker. And so my aunt was in the room and just felt this nice calming presence. And my grandmother came, picked him up and said it was time to go. And then she took him with her. So like, she's just kind of been like a guardian angel, I guess, in just different difficult times in our family, which has been very nice.
Have you seen her since your grandfather passed away? Hopefully it's not too personal.
I felt her here and there. I haven't felt her in quite some time, but I think after my grandfather, I don't think she's appeared to anybody, unless they haven't shared. But I felt her occasionally, like on like my grandmother was very spiritual and very religious. So like to me, she would, you know, make an appearance like on Christmas. I haven't felt her in a few years.
See, the reason I ask is because I kind of wonder about this, somewhat of a back and forth, that if you have somebody that's that uplifting, obviously, if there is a heaven, if there is a light, like, they're going to pass on, they're going to go there. Mm-hmm. But yet, they're always the people that kind of are seen around and kind of help out the family. So I kind of wonder sometimes if those people are, one, either waiting around to go with somebody else that they care about, such as, like, your grandfather, and then after that, mm-hmm. they're gone. Mm-hmm. Or if it's one of those things that, you know, if there is a heaven, there's the whole idea that, you know, it's heaven individually for each individual person. And right. I don't feel like heaven would be not being able to see anybody that you care about or your family ever again, or knowing that you're not gonna be able to see them until they pass away. So I kind of wonder sometimes if there's like this walk back and forth when you have these uplifting people that you see and you kind of perceive it as a paranormal experience. If it's not necessarily that they're like a not past spirit, like most people would perceive ghost as, mm-hmm. but rather that if you're in the light, if you're in this other place, that you have the option to go back and see your family, because that would be your individual heaven.
Yeah.
Especially yeah. if they're in crisis and needed your help too. Like, that would be torturous to watch your family need you and not be able to at least, you know, kind of push them in the right direction. You know, like, there's free will, yeah. of course. You can't tell them what to do, but kind of just, we're here. Yeah. It's okay. Just follow the path that you're doing. Do your
Calm
thing.
Down. Yeah. No, I think, I also no longer, it's been really freeing as an adult to explore and study different, like, what people view as their afterlife and how they perceive spirits. Or, you know, growing up Catholic, you have 20,000 saints and like meeting like someone that grew up Protestant. They're like, why do you guys like pray to statues of random people?
And realistically, there were people that did great deeds during their life. So they really are random people. It's not like they're angels or anything like that. I mean, maybe they're made an angel after they passed on, but, you know, yeah,
they're just these really nice guys.
Yeah. They're just really nice, random people. It helped out a lot of people, you know, like,
but, it's been kind of free. Like, I'm now to the point where I'm kind of agnostic, but I acknowledge that, like, religion and spirituality and afterlife is real for every person with the beliefs that they have. Like, heaven for a Christian is just as real to someone who believes in, like, a Hindu afterlife, or somebody that believes in reincarnation, or now that, like, pagan, like, a lot of pagan religions are starting to, like, make impressions again. Like, those are very real. And I almost feel like there are like 200 different forms of afterlife. Like, because why does there have to be one true one? Why can't we all have one?
See, you're kind of on the same kind of path somewhat that I am. I kind of go with the whole idea that I think that a lot of these religions and beliefs are all just multiple views of the same things. It's just different names for the same characters, same players, same archetypes. It's just people trying to describe things in the best way that they could from their perspective. So again, getting into the whole idea of a personal heaven, I mean, that would completely make sense. You know, like, yeah. if you are Norse, your perfect heaven is to be able to fight forever and never die, because that's what you enjoy. So boom, there's your individual perfect heaven that still fits into that paradigm of that, you know? And same with somebody with reincarnation. You know, somebody's idea of the perfect afterlife may not be to live in an afterlife, but rather to be able to relive the human experience again, because maybe on the other side, they see it as the human experience is the trials and tribulations you have to go through to get to that other side. But maybe some people enjoy, you know, bare knuckling the ride, and they just kind of let them live their own personal heaven through redoing that. I mean, I think that a lot of these things could all fit into the same context, and people kind of get divided over the defining lines of things, not realizing that, you know, you can kind of step back a little bit and kind of see how all of these things could still all kind of fit into the same structure. It's just different viewpoints of the same structure, you know?
Yeah, Absolutely.
Because, I mean, even with like a lot of the new agey stuff, you talk about like universal consciousness, you talk about all of this. I mean, universal consciousness is like the same idea as like what God is. It's just, you know, God is personified as a male, where like universal consciousness is personified as just this thing that's beyond human comprehension consciousness. It's just, it's not described as like looking like this individual thing or this. It's just this idea more so than anything, I kind of feel like. But it could be kind of like the idea that fluctuates into the universe. But again, just different perspectives of gods, because, you know, from the old biblical perspective, it was, you know, obviously back in the day when there was like the whole like male female kind of hierarchy thing. So of course they're going to put the creator of all as that male God. And then it kind of continues on down the line through the rest of time with that, because it's already been established in the fine print of that religion. But with the new age stuff, they don't necessarily put it under that context, because they're not looking at it in the same way. Because I do kind of believe that if there is some type of creator, universal consciousness, I don't think it applies to the same laws that we do. Like, I don't feel like it is a specific gender or specific this or specific that. It's more so just this like spectating type being that just kind of creates and does, and isn't necessarily like defined to one physical type of vessel or parts or whatever. I think it's just an existing thing that's beyond our comprehension. Because I mean, even in the Bible, they talk about the, you know, the biblical depictions of angels, and they're like these rotating wheels with wings. Like, they just seem like these interdimensional things that are beyond human understanding anyways. And we just put them in our context and just try to view it as like, all right, I want to see this as a person, because that's what makes sense to me. So then they start writing it as, instead of trying to describe that, they're like, it was this beautiful man that came down with these giant wings. And they just kind of fit it and just wanted to make it easier for them to describe, you know?
Just, I had to do a metal album cover where I had to draw a bunch of biblically accurate angels. And I was like, you know what? The phrase "be not afraid" really makes a lot of sense.
As you're this interdimensional being, be not afraid. Yeah, you cannot comprehend my full form.
Rotating eyeballs, fire, and like, be not afraid.
See, and the weird part about that is that you have that whole idea of, you know, like the ball on water, that if you're under the water and you're looking up at the ball, you're seeing it as that singular circle. But if you're outside of the water in that other reality, then you're seeing this full sphere shape. Yeah. So if we're looking at an angel from our under the water perspective, and we're seeing these rotating wheels and wings and stuff, I don't think we're perceiving their full view of what they even look like, because, like, I don't think we can comprehend those dimensions up to be able to even make sense of what we're even looking at. Like, our brain would just break and say, here's an outline of a person. There you go.
Yeah. Well, and then you get to the other side of things where, like, I remember reading an article years ago about where NASA was going to test to see if we were actually in a hologram. And I was like, I can't handle that right now.
How would you even test that? I mean, if you were ever going to test to see if we're in some type of hologram, obviously what you're using to test is also part of the hologram. Yeah. So it's not going to work, you know? Like,
like not a hologram, a simulation. But I was like, oh, God.
See, because I mean, even if we tested for it, that sim system would be so complex that we wouldn't even know what to even look for to even be able to prove it either way.
No. And like the one theories that I have always been fascinated with are like the Mandela effects and everything like that, and alternate timelines. And that was like the closest thing that I was like, that would be the closest test that you could have to a simulation, almost, is just like collective memory, which can be very unreliable. But at the same time, it's like there's some of these ones where everybody's like dead sure that have happened that has not happened. I love that.
So I just did an episode on that a couple episodes back. Actually, I had somebody come on and we were talking back and forth about that stuff. But I mean, that could prove one of two ways. Either one, it proves that we're in a simulation, which glitches can happen and things can malfunction. Or on the other side of it, it proves the fact that there's multiple dimensions that are capable of existing in the same space and time that kind of mesh and converge through each other sometimes, you know? Because it seems like most of the Mandela effects go in age groups. That's one thing I've noticed, that people born between this year and this year will be set on this. People born between this year and this year are set on this. So I feel like it might be like a zipper effect of like timelines almost, you know?
Yeah. and which is fascinating and terrifying at the same time, but I love it.
Right? That people would even have weird stuff like this happening, but yet we're still trying to clash particles together. That sounds like a great idea. And on top of that, they say it's scientific based, but every single time they're about to do something, they have this big, weird pagan celebration thing outside of CERN. They got Shiva outside of CERN. So it's like, is it really scientific, or you guys got some other weird intentions and stuff going on over there? Because I think you do. Trying to play God themselves. You got to destroy to rebuild. I mean, that's the only symbolism I could see behind Shiva being out front.
Fair. Very fair.
See, because they're trying to break the particles down to turn reality into Legos, which again would almost, again, possibly prove the simulation theory concept, which in a weird way, if you look at it, I mean, atoms could kind of do that in a way too, because atoms could almost be the same as zeros and ones as far as like the systems we're creating, you know? Not to get too weird off in philosophy at the end, I apologize. I like getting off off into weird trains of thought at the end of the show. That tends to happen frequently.
Oh, you're good. You're good. I love that stuff.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
But kind of wrapping up towards the end, I always like to do words of wisdom at the end of the show. So if there's any words of wisdom you want to pass on to the listeners, be it something serious, funny, kind of whatever you're feeling, to possibly some of the, some other artists out there, what might some words of wisdom be that you want to bestow on the listeners?
I know it's a very terrifying world out there right now, both socially, politically, creatively, just... I know a lot of us are struggling to get by. And especially as an artist, I'm finding that a lot of us are discouraged with the way that AI is kind of taking over, not just in art, but also in writing, in our searches, in our chats, in our email, in every aspect. But I think now it's more important to make human connection and to just lift each other up, lift up your community. And it just, it feels so nice and it feels so productive. Like even what we're doing right now with this conversation, it just feels good. And I think in a very scary, I feel like my job half the time is the world is burning and I'm asking if people want to buy a painting. But
hey, sometimes it's nice though to stare at that painting as the world's burning around you, because at least you got something pretty to look at.
Yeah, I think some of, as cliche as it sounds, is doing things that make you happy, and also just reaching out to people can feel really good. And finding, like, especially if, you know, like, I'm a weird kid. I like finding other weird kids. I like finding weird adults. I like talking about weird stuff to weird adults. I think it's just important to find each other. And just to keep going. I know it's really rough, but also if you support your community supports you.
I definitely agree with that, because honestly, before I started the show, I was kind of like the weird one out that didn't really talk to a lot of people, because I was always the weird kid, you know? I was like the kid that would play by himself in the playground and everything. But once I met the crypto community, it's just totally different. It's like I found my own gang of weirdos, and I absolutely love it, because everybody is a weirdo and they're not ashamed of it, and everybody is totally okay with being their own individual selves, because those are some of the best people that exist in the world. And if it wasn't for the crypto community, then I wouldn't be where I am now with the confidence that I have to talk to people now, just because they've just been so welcoming and inviting. And that's why I love doing these types of shows too, and kind of including everybody in the community, because, you know, it's not very often that people have artists on, you know, like a podcast and stuff, because you guys are more of like a visual medium. But honestly, I love having artists on the show, because one, it spreads more word out in the community to some of the audio people that may not be digging into like the Instagrams and seeing all the cryptid artwork and everything out there. And it also kind of, you know, gives the opportunity to talk to some of the people that don't typically go on shows and talk and everything, like all the other researchers and everything in the community. But everybody has their own story to tell. Everybody expresses themselves in different ways. And artists are very deep people with a lot to express. And sometimes you, you know, they get a little bit scared behind the microphone, but once you get them opening up, they, you know, are some of the most fun people to talk to. So I absolutely love having artists on the show.
Well, especially if we're all in our niches, then we can't get us to shut up.
See, that's my thing too, is that, you know, I don't talk that much to average people, but as soon as you get me going with my community, my friends, like I turn into a social butterfly and I'm talking to everybody. Yeah. You can't get me to shut up. We're like, we got to leave. And here I am 2 hours later, still talking to somebody, but especially at the events. Cause if it wasn't for you being busy at Squonkapalooza, I probably would have sat there and talked to you for 45 minutes. So
yeah, same.
Well, we'll have our chance this year, hopefully, at Squonkapalooza, and maybe we can all hang out after, because I know they did a bowling thing last year, but it wasn't super organized as far as everybody knowing where to go, so I'll have to make sure everybody coordinates and we can all hang out as a community afterwards, because that'd be super fun.
Absolutely.
And for anybody that wants to come in, check out some of your art, possibly get some pieces themselves, where can people find you on social media? Where can people buy your art? And also, because you vend a lot, why don't you let people know the next couple conventions you're going to be at so that people can possibly come out and pick up some of your art?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on both Facebook and Instagram at Manfish Inc. And that's INC, not INK, for Inc. I am going to be, I do quite a few events up and down on the mid, I'm kind of everywhere on the East Coast this year. Mostly, I'm going to be at Wytheville UFO Festival this weekend, which I'm really stoked on.
I think my co-host is going to be there. So if you see Orin from Bizarre Encounters, that's my other half of my other show.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm going to be at like a Blobfest, Squonkapalooza. But I also do a lot of like anime conventions. So I'm going to be at Otakon, and I'm going to do my first furry convention at Anthrocon. So if anybody is out in the Pittsburgh area, I would love for you to say hello. And I do announce most of my shows on my Instagram. I try to put up my monthly schedule. Same on Facebook. I used to be on TikTok, but I'm not really active there much anymore. But
TikTok's annoying to use, if I'm being honest with you. I have a TikTok and I hate using it.
It's just turned into like a bunch of it's turned into ads. So I can't do it anymore.
Ads and people yelling about things.
Yeah. Yes. Lots of people yelling about things. if you want to if you can't go to a show, my artwork is on my Etsy, and that's manfishinc.etsy.com. I do put up my canvases up there only a few times a year. So if you follow me on Instagram, I will announce when those are up. They go by very quickly. But I try to make as many as possible so they can all be adopted and be put into their proper homes. Yeah, I would say Instagram is probably my most active one, and so that's where you can find me. And I love talking to people, and I love interacting with people, especially if we all have the same interests. So, yeah.
Don't be afraid to come up and say hello to both of us at Squonkapalooza, because we'll both be there. And of course, I will include all of your links down in the show description so people can find it quick and easy and they won't have to type it all out. So if anybody wants to go and pick up some awesome art, just scroll down to the show description and click the link.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you making the time to come on today. Looking forward to when we get to meet again in person, actually have a full-blown conversation. And hopefully at some point again, we can come back around and we can do another show and dive into some weird philosophy and ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Of course. Anytime.
If you're interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook, or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the link tree, of course. And if anybody's interested in podcast or audiobook production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media, see what I might be able to do for you to make your job a little bit easier. And every single thing that I mentioned is available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.